Over 250 million connected devices send life-saving data to 911 and first responders through the Rapid SOS Clearinghouse. Whether it's device-based location, connected car data, caller's medical profile, or home security footage, Rapid SOS is your trusted source for location and all additional data. Currently, over 3,000 emergency communication centers nationwide rely on our technology for faster and better prepared emergency response. For free access to this life-saving information, visit rapidsos.com.
This is Jordan, and you're listening to the Code 7 Podcast Network.
Warning: this episode contains the three A's of podcasting: adult content, adult language, and awesomeness. You've been warned.
Welcome to Within the Trenches, true stories from the 911 dispatchers who live them.
I never used to delete calls. Kind of like you mentioned earlier, I never used to delete them before I'll dispatch them. I call up in a roundabout. That's what it said. Silt roundabout. So I get the chief, who's the only person working on the radio. I'm like, "Chief, we have a call in the roundabout." He's like, "Go ahead." It was a rabid Rottweiler chasing a rabbit in the roundabout. I hadn't read it. That's what I had to say on the radio. And my boss is over there like, "You really need to read calls before you start talking."
Oh, man. Should we start there? So for those of you who are listening right now, we have already started this episode. We were just jumping right in, and James had this excellent story that he was telling, and we just had to go with it. So for those who are listening, this is Within the Trenches, episode 276, and true stories from the 911 dispatchers who live them. We're recording live from the 2019 NINA National Conference here in Orlando, Florida, and we are wrapping up day number two in the Expo Hall. This episode is sponsored by Rapid Deploy as well as Rapid SOS, presented by NINA and supported by InDigital. And my guests today are Dispatch Dana, 911 advocate. Welcome back.
Hello. Thank you for having me again.
You're like so low.
Am I? Hold on. No, it just drug across.
Oh, I know, right?
It's like, don't mess with my stuff. Woman. Just,
Hello.
Hello.
You kind of sounded like Mrs. Doubtfire there.
Did I?
Hello.
I've seen that movie.
Oh, good. We were just talking about the fact that she hasn't seen a lot of movies and stuff. And yeah, so welcome back. You were on when we were in Nashville, right? Did we do another one after that? Or
very first one with you was when we did for the cool kids of 911, the mini conference.
That's
and we were
right.
Promoting the mini seat. It was like episode 50, maybe?
Maybe. Holy crap. No, like it was like in the early 20s. Yes.
Yep. So it was like when you were first starting out.
Holy cow. And then Nashville.
And then Nashville.
And then fast forward to now?
I feel like we've done a couple.
Holy crap.
Two or three. We've done at least three.
Yeah. Well, welcome back.
I'm glad to be here. Yeah. I'm always glad to be here.
Hell yeah.
It's a good time.
It's going to be fun. And also, we have the 911 field coordinator for the Nebraska Public Service Commission, James.
Hey, thank you for letting me come on. This is fun.
Well,
so far.
We've been talking about this for a long time.
We have.
Maybe a year or two, something like that. We've been talking for a while to get you on here.
Yeah, at least 2 years.
So you were just talking about about a call and how it was hard for you to say your R's.
Yes, I have a real issue with it.
Yeah.
I mostly adapt my language to avoid that letter entirely.
Man.
And down to the fact that I changed my name because it had two very pronounced R's in it.
Wait a minute. Are you for real?
Mm-hmm.
No.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you don't mind me asking, what was it before then?
Christopher.
Oh, okay.
Which sounds like an L. Christopher is like really not that good for me.
Dude, it sounds all right though, man. It sounds good.
I don't
good.
Think I can look at Dana while we do this. She's just cracking up.
Well, so before we get into some of the dispatch stories that we're going to be talking about, I want to know a little bit more about you, because we've talked a lot and stuff, but I don't know that I know like your full background and stuff. So how did you get into dispatching to begin with? And where did you start? How did it all come about?
So, I have a family friend. I call her my aunt. She is a dispatch supervisor in Western Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was a 21-year-old, I came to visit. And she was working. She just, you know, dispatches, they get mandated. She couldn't get time off.
Right. Or voluntold, yeah.
So, I went and visited at the PSAP. And I was like, I don't know what to tell you. I want to do this one day. This is just so cool. The chance to make an immediate difference in someone's life blew my mind. I worked at a bank in the UK. Mm-hmm. And the best thing I could do for someone is give them debt. Hey, you can have a loan. Good luck.
Yeah. call me later.
I'll call you if you don't pay. It's fine.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, so 5 years later, I've been visiting every year, and every time I'd visit the PSAP, 5 years later, I was lucky enough to move to the same area and live there. It was the only job I applied for. It was literally the only thing I ever wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
Someone once told me no one dispatches on purpose. I did. I'm like the only one.
Nice.
So I was lucky enough to get the job. And then I was a CTO after 2 years. I got involved in local NINA APCO and started coming to national conferences. And this year I took a position with the Nebraska Public Service Commission. Took over from Troy Caudle, if you know him.
Mm-hmm.
And my job is to liaise between the state and the 68 PSAPs in Nebraska.
Wow.
So,
what was one of the things that really drew you to dispatching? You know, it's one of the things that, I mean, you said you don't always do it on purpose.
A lot of people don't.
What was it? What was it that when you went in there, was it just listening? I mean, was it, sometimes people say that, you know, it's the adrenaline. But
I think I may have been simply, a little bit of an adrenaline junkie.
Yeah, or just the simple fact that you got to help people immediately,
that
like you
too.
Were saying.
The immediate, I know it's quite there to make an immediate difference in someone's life. But those moments when you get off the phone and you're just proud of the thing you did, they were worth it. They were worth the times when you wouldn't do anything. You'd be sat around watching Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, the really tough ones. But you'd have that call where you'd deliver a baby or CPR would save someone's life. And it was absolutely worth it. Everything else was worth it. And I think that's what I wanted. I chased that.
That's awesome, man. Now, what was it like for you in the beginning, though? I mean, you get in there, you're finally doing what it is that you want to do. I mean, was it overwhelming at first, or did you... How did it go for you?
Culture shock.
Yeah.
It was my first job in the country, as well as, you know, dispatch training in general is... It's a rigorous workout. Rigorous. Look at R words. You're picking out all the R words on me. It's a...
I'm not doing it on purpose, man.
It's a mental workout, so to speak.
Yeah.
And I struggled with things that I didn't think I'd ever struggle with in life, like that you guys spell check funny, or tire doesn't have a Y in this country.
Yeah. Well,
so I put calls up and people were like, what does this say? And it was interesting. I'd say things that would be completely normal in a British office environment, and I'd be like, get in the boss's office. Oh, we don't say the C word in here?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a lot of different things.
This was a culture shock for me because it was normal to happen with around people you work with, especially in the close-knit nature dispatchers work together.
Right.
To joke in a normal, in that way, and it just wasn't something we did.
Well, what about like callers? Like how did that work
for
you?
That's what I was going to say, because like we know that you're talking about your radio and then with coworkers, but can you imagine like the callers? Because I make him repeat when we're talking on the phone, like, what did you just say to me?
In the 6 years I was there, I only had two occasions where callers truly honed in on the accent. One of them asked me if we outsourced 911 to India.
Oh.
Which was interesting.
Yeah.
That was on the back of them just not listening to the question. And I was still a CTO then, and my CTO jumped on the phone and yelled at the person. Like, what just happened?
Right.
And then the second time, I think the person was just looking for a fight. They called up and they were unhappy that they'd been fired and they weren't getting paid. They wanted to take it out on anyone. So it wasn't too bad with callers.
And then how long have you been dispatching then, I guess? How long were you doing that before you made your switch over to Nebraska?
I did 6 years.
6 years.
2 years at dispatcher, 4 as a CTO.
Do you remember your first call at all? Or any earlier calls?
I do remember my first call. It was really funny. Because I didn't know anyone. I just moved into town.
Mm-hmm.
And the first call, the first 911 call, hey, there's a crazy chick here. Click. And I knew that guy. He was the only guy I knew in town. He just ruined my first call after all the training. And he hung up on me. I had to call him back. And he's like, no, there's a crazy chick. You have to send a cop. Click. Dude, give me something. I mean, CTO, I'm going to get fired if I don't do this properly. And he just kept hanging up. Every time I call him back, he'd hang up. I'd get no information. We never found her.
Oh, what?
Yeah. She took off before the police got there, and we never found her.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
But that's one. Okay, so that was one of the first ones.
Yes. That was my very first call, and I'm like, surely not.
And this was out of, while you were training still, or?
I had just finished. We had a phase training. We have 2 weeks of geography and policy, and then.
Oh, okay.
It was my first call. My first day on call tank training. So I was still in CTO, but it was the very first call I ever took.
Holy cow. The look on your face is like you're trying to process what he was saying.
No, well, I know.
Thanks.
Well, I was like, just I don't know that I can remember my first call. Like, that's my thing. Is like, I was thinking back and I'm like, because I spent a lot of time listening, you know, because you'd hooked up to your trainer or whatever. And I don't remember the first call I answered, but I feel like I remember the first call that I, like, when I was released and on my own, where I just like nailed it. And we had, even though the prison, we didn't use, it was federal, so we didn't usually respond. However, they had a shanking that was so bad that it was like 12 people ended up getting flown out. And so we were getting 911 calls from the prison and having to dispatch the fire and make sure that we had the help. Like, we were having to call in helicopters for them and
what?
Stuff, which we don't usually.
I have to clarify. You said 12 people were flown out from a shanking?
Yes. And that was... And,
and that was from one person who was doing this?
I don't know. I don't see that's the thing. Is that we don't know because we don't have any insight to that. But then there was an additional ridiculous amount of people that ended up, like, in the medical whatever anyways in the prison.
Cool.
So, like, that was... Because it's one of those things you weren't expecting. And at the time, like, there was only three people. Unit lead. They could run the center with three people. And so that was overwhelming for us to have to get that much help
right.
to them.
Yeah.
It was. And so, like, I just remember going, oh, my gosh. Like, when it was all over, like, I'm like, I did that. Like, I did that. And it was good.
I kicked
was,
ass and took names.
That's how I felt about
on
it.
On a 12-person
like, yeah.
shanking. Bro, listen. Holy
I've never
cow.
Heard of a mass shanking.
I know, yeah.
It was insane. Right? I mean, you don't hear about that stuff. It was crazy. It was crazy. And,
well,
like, and
well
again,
done.
For us to be involved, it was a whole, like, a whole big thing in and of itself, because normally the sheriff's office was not involved in any aspects of the prison, but
right.
it was to such a level that they needed some assistance. So,
holy crap.
I don't think many people are equipped for mass shanking incidents.
Oh, my gosh. It was crazy. It was a big day.
Yeah,
it sounds like it.
Yeah, holy cow, man, that's freaking nuts. Now, James, what about some of the calls that, you know, out of your 6 years, you know, something that has stuck with you?
I have a lot of funny calls.
Mm-hmm.
I always was not very good at holding my tongue. When someone would ask a silly question, I was really not very good at being like, yeah, and giving them a polite answer. It was a mistake. It was a problem of mine. Like,
yeah.
I had this one cop. And he had to clarify every piece of information you ever gave him. And twice, I just literally said, uh-huh, on the radio, because it was like a back and forth over and over. And then realized what I did. I mean, correction, affirm. Like, it was really bad. I had to correct my uh-huh.
I did that once. I got into some trouble, too.
Yeah. So we had lots of stories like that. One of my favorite ever cops, he used to call on duty in the happiest tone every day. We had a radio tower down. And somebody, the next jurisdiction over, was really unhappy about this because he felt he wasn't safe.
Uh-huh.
And he'd said something like, in radio, like, it won't work. And then the happy cop calls on duty. He's like, dispatch, I'm on duty. And I love our radios. He's going to get us sued so bad. Like, with his happy attitude. And it was just the funniest conversation ever.
Oh, man. You know, some of those things are what I remember most is hearing funny traffic. And sometimes on accident. I remember a newer officer in one of the cities there in the county that I worked for. He called up a car that he was pulling over, and it was a Grand Prix, red in color. And I'm sitting on radios, and I look over at my partner, and we're busting up laughing. And I said, "Did he really just say that?" So I get on the radio, and I said, Can you advise again, you know, what kind of vehicle that was? And he goes, Grand Prix. And then someone must have said something to him, because at the end of it, he ends up saying it was a Grand Prix. But it just, I mean, he was a younger guy. He was just off of training and stuff by himself. And that's how he called out the car. It was a Grand Prix.
I would do bloopers for my agency. Like that's when I would do it every year. And then I would do them. I'd release them during National Telecommunicator Week to kind of bring us some attention. And we had one of the new rookie guys. He was out there and he ran a Joseph Dixon horse. And then and I've got it all on the blooper reel. And he comes back, he's like, "Can you try it again without the whores?" And I mean, it was hysterical. And he was not processing it. And
right.
But we were dying.
Oh man. Yeah. See, all those types of things. That the traffic, they would come in, or they would find a license plate that had a name that when you would pronounce it, it sounded like, you know, you were swearing or something, just to see if you would do it. And they got me a couple times. And it was always funny, though. It was like a rite of passage, you know?
Yeah.
Right. Like, once they got you, then it's like, all right, you're one of us or whatever, you know? And it always made it fun.
I had a cop, one of my favorites, again. We all like the cops we work with. Mm-hmm. And he was in FTO, and he pulled over the car, and he gave me champagne-colored whatever it was. So for months, I'm like, we just made jokes about champagne cars. Everywhere he went, it's like, pull over the next champagne car you see or whatever. So when he found out I was leaving, that's all he did his final day, was pull over any car that could be considered champagne colored. He called them out as champagne colored cars. It was a good time.
And some of the officers that I worked with, they ended up doing the color that they would use. They would say either like champagne, or they would say pearl white, burnt orange, midnight blue. Like they would really get specific about those colors, and it would make it way more fun when you're doing it like that.
We had a guy, he would run a Toyota. He's like, I'm out with it. Instead of a Toyota, it was a Toyota.
A Toyota?
Yeah.
A Toyota. I don't have anything for that one.
Oh,
sorry, Dana.
Man.
But talking about cops and hazing, you know, I worked there for 2 years before someone told me they thought I couldn't pronounce triple. Because in Britain, we would say treble for free of anything. So for those first 9 minutes after midnight, I'd be like, it's treble 05. And I was in a meeting with a cop. He's like, can you just learn how to say triple, please? And I'm like, what are you talking about? And he explains. I'm like, that's just the thing we say. And no one had ever said anything to me for 2 years, and they were all just snickering and laughing behind my back about how I couldn't say triple.
Yeah.
And you just thought it was like your R's, you had a problem with that too?
Yes. I was actually saying a completely different word, and they had no idea.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Well, so, you know, we were talking about how, you know, there would be sometimes that your responses to people wouldn't be like the greatest or off-colored or whatever.
Yes.
Well, there's a, I wouldn't say an iconic call, but there's a call from it's not around anymore, Dispatch Magazine Online, but I've got audio that they have on there, and this one is about some disorderly daughters, and the dispatcher was just joking, and maybe people have heard this before. If you heard the podcast, you've heard it at least 3 or 4 times, but I just want to play it really quick, because what you're telling me, it just makes me think of this. So hopefully it plays over here.
911, what is your emergency?
Yes, I need a police officer over here at 7.
What's going on?
I've got 2 teenage daughters, and I just got home from work. They were physically fighting with each other, and one of them kicked a hole in a door. And they're 12 and almost 14, and the 12-year-old is completely out of control. And I physically, if she's as big as I am, I can't control this.
Okay, did you want us to come over and shoot her? Are you there?
Excuse me?
That's a joke. Okay, so
who are you? What is your name?
Mike Forbes.
Okay, that's not funny, Mike. I'm going to file a formal complaint.
I don't blame you a bit.
Hey, because you know what? This is really not very funny.
I know it's not, ma'am.
Guess what? It's not going to be very funny when I go in front of your supervisor and tell him.
I understand.
I guess he can just listen to the tape.
Yes, he can. I'm sorry. I apologize.
Well,
hold
sorry
on.
Doesn't
hold
cut
on
it. I need
second.
A police officer.
Hold on.
Hold on.
Ma'am?
Yeah.
Okay. 10 and 12 or 12 and 14?
12 and 13 and a half.
Okay. All right. Get police officers on the way. They're on an emergency call right now, but as soon as I can get one free, I'll get them on the way.
Oh, well, don't rush or anything.
Well, I apologize for my smart remark, and I will get them in route as soon as I can.
Okay, and what is your name again?
Mike Forbes. My number is 605.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah.
That's like a serious no filter problem. Yeah.
It's one thing with the cops you work with. You kind of get your sense of humor, but with a citizen, I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, you know.
It feels uncomfortable for him.
Yeah, he made a little humility. Joke. Yes, he did. Yeah, so, and I have to hand it to this guy, Mike, because he did apologize and gave his whole name and everything.
And his number,
and, yeah. Yep, and his number is like, go ahead, call my supervisor.
I totally end this one.
But it's when you get to that point, then maybe you need to take a little vacation or something. Like, if you are that burnout that you can't even control that filter, you might need to just take a moment. Or,
yeah.
You know,
I had one of those with a neighboring agency.
But you know, maybe he wasn't. Maybe he just simply made that joke.
I don't think you can defend this one.
Yeah, I don't know, man.
Like, Mike is a bad telecommunicator. I have no idea about his body of work. There was just the wrong time to say that.
He probably figured that because she was so stressed out, he was going to try to make her laugh with the joke. And it just really wasn't a good joke to do. Because, I mean, he wants to go shoot her or what? What?
Like, yes, please.
Yeah, immediately. And that's a joke. I'm sorry.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. It's like, I mean, that was instant regret. You could just hear it.
Oh, for sure, man. Yeah.
Like, I just said that out loud.
I had a similar issue. I got off a phone call once, and my boss said, did you just say that? It was to a neighboring agency, and I called. We had a vehicle go into the Colorado River. Mm-hmm. And they asked me for the vehicle description. And I just went, we don't have one, but I'm confident you'll find it. In the river. If you drive past another car in the river, you stop and check on it just in case.
Right.
It'll be okay.
It's like whenever hunting season was going on, we would get phone calls of, there's a gentleman that's walking down the roadway. I just thought you guys might want to know, okay, what's the description? And they would tell me the description, and they would say, you know, the gentleman is wearing all camo and he's carrying a rifle. And there was, I always wanted to say, how can you see him? Did you wear a camouflage?
And use this to blend in.
Yeah, exactly. But I would never say that. It's just in the back of my head. I would think it. And it was just somebody who was just walking down the road to get to like a friend's property or something for hunting, because they would allow them to go. But someone would always call and we would joke afterwards. I think actually an officer came over the radio once and asked that. Like, how did they see them? And that's all they said. And one of the newer dispatchers that was there is like, I don't understand. Like, what does he mean? How did they not see him? And we're all laughing, but the one person does not get it why we're laughing. And I remember saying it's because the person was wearing camouflage. You know, you can't see.
I had a couple of cops who would call me out on the stupid things I'd say or do. This one time I dispatched a call that there was a vehicle driving down the highway with white powder coming out of the back. That was the call. That's what the call taker put up. It was a suspicious call. We gave it out. And the cop...
Had you read it first before you put it out? Okay.
I gave it out. We gave it out as a suspicious incident. There's a vehicle and there's a bunch of white powder coming out of the back of it. I didn't think much about it. The cop says, I'm UTL, all this white powder. There's too much snow in the way. He just called me out. I can't see no white powder for all this snow. So it was just snow coming out the back of the car. None of us even thought about it.
Yeah, it wasn't cocaine.
And that was what we were thinking. That was the same day that a co-worker of mine, and I didn't leave this call. She put up a call for a patient who had a clamp in the hand, but she dropped the M. So it just said, patient just had a clamp in their hand. And I hadn't read the darn call, and I gave it out to the fire department. They're like, dispatch, can you repeat that? Yeah, give me 1 second. I'll clarify.
Crap in the hand, yeah.
You treat that? I don't know.
I don't know if you can. I mean, that might be a sign of a different kind of illness.
Jeez. So as we go into the wrap-up of this episode and the wrap-up of the exhibitor hall and everything here, what are some of the things that you guys have seen, or if you've been in any sessions or anything? I know, Dana, you've been volunteering and everything up there. But what are some of the things that you guys have seen that you just, man, you know, the, especially like the technology, how things are just progressing in public safety in general?
Yeah, I've spent a lot of time with the next gen because of my new job is to bring next gen to Nebraska or help bring next gen to Nebraska.
Right.
And I'm just always impressed at how many people are out there trying to do better with more data and provide that to public safety professionals. Like in digital, a good example, we sat there next to Carbine with the video service. Mm-hmm. There's an awful lot of cool stuff that's coming dispatchers' way in the next couple of years.
I agree. And that's what I was going to say, because I've been watching, there's a lot of people that are bringing video in. You know what I'm saying? There's this, there's several vendors here that have videos that either interface with your CAD or your call, you know, your phone system. So it's been, there's a lot coming down the pike as everything is changing and evolving into the next gen environment.
Did you get to see his texty yet? We were talking in French earlier through texty and it was translating for him.
Oh, stop. I'm going to have to come in.
Yeah.
Okay.
You'll have to check it out,
I'm going to have to come check this out.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
The next stop is going to be the Indigital booth over there.
Boom.
I think it's going to close in 20 seconds.
Yeah.
Oh.
You may be SOL.
Tomorrow.
I'll send you the video.
Okay.
Yeah, because right. The vendor hall, this is the last.
Oh,
the
is
vendor
it?
Hall, yeah.
Oh, closed. Okay. Well, then never mind.
We were
again, I'll send you the video.
Okay. That'll work.
Highway through the danger zone. Yep. Oh,
I just still can't believe she's never seen Star Wars.
Yeah.
And she hates Top Gun.
Almost.
I don't completely hate it.
She gave
you just
it a
like
four.
The volleyball scene. That's all.
She gave it a four, so.
Yeah.
Well, out of it wasn't 10. My favorite. It wasn't my case. Favorite.
How dare you?
I know. He's still marrying me. I'm just saying.
That works. Yeah.
It'd be really awkward if you're listening to this in like 10 years and he left you because you don't love Top Gun. Oh,
that's so
don't
messed up. That's
my relationship already.
That's so wrong. Jeez.
James is putting a bad juju out of my marriage.
What the heck?
That's okay.
Well, for those who are listening, if you have any comments, questions, or you want to be a guest on the show, you can email us. And this will be WTTpodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter. That is @911podcast. You can like us on Facebook. That's facebook.com/WithinTheTrenchesPodcast. This episode, along with all the other episodes recorded during the NENA National Conference, are sponsored by Rapid Deploy as well as Rapid SOS, also been presented by NENA and supported by InDigital. This episode, along with the others, can be heard 24/7 on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, your favorite podcasting app, and withinthetrenches.net. Have a good one, everybody.
You just listened to a Code 7 Network podcast. If you have any questions or would like to be a guest on the show, send an email to WTTpodcast@gmail.com.